I'm the guy who overhears what you say and passes it on to the enemy. I seem to recognize some of you.
And I had put mustard and ketchup and relish in the usual. And I put the hot dog up to my mouth, and somebody started screaming.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone.
Froggy went a-courting, he did ride, his sword and pistol by his side.
Whenever folks are drinking, I'm pretty certain to be around.
He tiptoed up to Miss Mouse's door. He gave three knocks and a great loud roar.
I was pretty jacked up on marijuana, so I decided to try it.
Here's someone else who did me a good turn.
CJAM FM 99.1 and CJAM.ca, Windsor, Detroit.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right, I'm Big JD. You're listening to You Talking to Me on CJAM 99.1 FM. My guest today is Ida Bird Hill, president and founder of Uplift, Inc. She was president of the Harvard Group Wealth Management LLC for 10 years, providing advice and implementation of financial planning, insurance, investment, and mortgages. Ida holds a bachelor's degree in economics, finance from the University of Michigan, and she's very active in many community programs here to discuss how we can get our lives back from financial struggles and what programs are in place to make a difference. Please welcome Ida Bird Hill to the show. Hi, Ida.
Oh, thank you, Big JD. Glad to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the statistics, I guess, on credit card debt and things like that. To your knowledge, how big is that?
Well, before the meltdown, It was out of control because people bought everything on credit. I mean, in the worldwide economy is very dependent upon credit because it stretches your resources a lot. So if you make $50,000 with credit, you now have $100,000 to spend at your disposal. So that's how our economy, all of our economies have grown, is by the stretching of that disposable income. So we're very heavily dependent upon debt. Well, if you don't have money to pay that debt, that becomes quite traumatic, which is where we are in this little meltdown. People don't have the money to pay the debt any longer.
And what about, the rate of foreclosures that's going on now?
Well, in the United States, the rate of foreclosures have been really extremely high, and particularly in some very key places like Michigan, California, Florida. We've had a lot of meltdown of mortgage companies in those areas. We've had the meltdown of the auto industry that has affected people's ability to pay. And so people have been losing their homes. Another thing that happened that most people don't know that kind of perpetuated all of that and started that whole process is it used to be that you would have a mortgage for 30 years. You had an interest rate that was fixed for 30 years. So you didn't really worry about the interest rate too much. Then you got this little beautiful thing called adjustable rate mortgages, or option iron mortgages, that brought your rates really low. But when they adjust upward, they're only supposed to go up by a certain percentage based on a rate. Well, unfortunately, our banks and mortgage companies decided that they were going to increase it despite the rate increasing. So you have individuals who either may have had bad credit or even had good credit, who started in a mortgage rate that was reasonable, and then every couple years it adjusted to become so unreasonable. So it's not unheard of to have an interest rate of 13, 14, 15%. Well, if you went into a house at 6% interest rate, 13, 14% is double. Unmanageable house payment. So now you live manageable initially, but now you're living where you can't afford that mortgage, let alone anything else.
Right.
So you're put in a situation is either do I keep the house and then I can't do anything else, or do I let the house go so I can have a life? And so most people are making a choice. I'm letting the house go.
Yeah.
And letting the house go.
And hand in hand with that, something I want to ask you about is the unemployment rate locally.
Oh. People do not realize in this country how United States, Canada, Japan, Europe is very dependent upon the auto industries.
Sure.
And when we think of the auto industries, we normally only think of the big three U.S. or the big three Japanese or the big three Korean. But that's not really what the auto industry is made up of. Those are just manufacturers that put together the cars. Mm-hmm. We forget about all of the manufacturers and suppliers who makes the parts that they put together,
right?
Which is a much bigger industry. So in a lot of those countries, they make up 60% of the employers. So imagine if you were one of those suppliers, and when the big three in the United States went through bankruptcy, you were left hanging with $1 billion. Just got wiped out.
Yeah.
You can't recoup your $1 billion because you didn't get a bailout.
Right.
So what do? You lay off people. So imagine you have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of companies who did that at the same time. So while the big Japanese, the big Korean, the big U.S. manufacturers were made whole, all of their suppliers were not. And those suppliers make up many more employees than those major manufacturers, which is why we're having high unemployment. And we're going to have continued high unemployment because those suppliers have not really bounced back yet.
So there's so many people struggling with these financial issues, and hopefully we're going to shed some light on the situation for them today. So maybe we can discuss what many people are going through, the depression and the stress and things like that. What are you seeing?
You know, people are very depressed, and then probably because you're hearing so much negative news. I was at the bookstore on yesterday, and they're talking about the worldwide meltdown.
Yeah.
First, it was just a U.S. meltdown.
Uh-huh.
But now with Greece and the issues that Greece is having, now we're into this worldwide meltdown. So you hear that. Imagine you hear that every single day. That's negativity all day, every day. People are human, and as being a human, you're emotional. Even though we think that people are logical about money, people are not. They're emotional about money. And it drags down the way that you feel. It drags down the way that you respond to things that happen. And so people are just in what we call a good old-fashioned funk. They're in a bad mood. Now, they can't get out because part of what got them in is all the negativity. But if you keep hearing negativity all day, every day, you never hear anything positive, it kind of keeps you weighted there. Quite negative because it's hard to kind of break out of that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where most people are, not only in the U.S., but all over the world in that funk, and they don't know how to break out of it at all.
And that was my next question. What is that financial funk? And what part does self-confidence and self-esteem play in all this? And you know, what's its importance and how do we build that back up?
Well, I think it plays a big role because one of the things that I've learned, doesn't matter what the economy does. If you know who you are and what you like to do, you know how to maneuver in any economy. I laugh and joke. Every time we've had a major downturn, I've opened a new business.
Mm-hmm.
People go, why do you do that? Because while everybody else is moaning and lamenting about how terrible it is,
right.
I'm looking for opportunity because that means that some of the strong competitors are starting to fall out of the market. And that's an opportunity to find some things to do and to make different ways to make money because people are not paying attention. So I think the self-confidence and self-esteem plays a big role in that because it allows you to look and say and observe and say, what type of opportunities are available? What competitors are falling out? I use a good example, bookstores. You got Barnes & Noble that's doing real well. You got Borders that's in bankruptcy. They sell the same commodity.
Right.
They sell books. One got real heavy into the technology of books. The other did not. They missed that opportunity. So sometimes, you know, you have to sit, even though the economy is bad, there are some opportunities that are happening all over the world if you're very observant. But you got to be able to open your eyes and just to look. Stop listening to what other people say in negativity and just say, okay, what opportunities are going on? Because even in the midst of this, I chuckle. The one entity of industry that has not suffered financially is electronic products.
Right.
And you would think they would because those products are not cheap. They're very expensive. But people are still buying laptops. People are still buying iPods. People are still buying electronic readers for books, which mm-hmm. is ironic. That industry has not suffered at all. Why not? People want electronic products.
That's right.
So that means that there's opportunities out there for people who want to go into technology and build things for those electronic products. You know, you see that people are building apps for the Android phone. They're building apps for the iTunes. Some of the apps are actually downright silly. But mm-hmm. if you get 1 million people paying 99 cents an app, that adds up.
That's right, yeah.
So there's opportunities, but your self-esteem and confidence, if you don't have it, you're not going to see them.
Right. Nor are you going to, you know, take the chance on doing something for yourself or starting a business or anything mm-hmm. like that. And
that's
important as well. And you talk about the three signs that you're in a financial funk. What are those?
I would say the biggest sign is that when you don't want to get up to go to work.
Right.
That's a big sign. And it didn't, and sometimes when people say, well, that only happens to people in certain careers. No, it's not. When you know that you don't want to get up and go to work, that means that you probably, that's not the career for you any longer. That's a big sign.
Right. Is it also because of, I mean, you may enjoy your job to a degree, but you realize that you're going to work every day, you're making the same amount of money, but you no longer can afford your mortgage or can pay for these things because the percentages are so high. Is that come into play as well with that?
Or? That does come into a play a lot, but I think that it's a revolving door. For those who really enjoy their job, they always squirrel away money for other things.
Okay.
What happens to a lot of us, though, we buy things to numb the pain of what we do for a living. Sure. We don't say that to each other. I use a good example. I had a client who owned 200 pairs of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of shoes.
I take it that was a woman.
It was a man.
No.
I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
And so my thing was, why do you own so many pair of shoes? And then half of them were all taupe and brown.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, how do you know which shoe to pick?
Sure.
And so, you know, just listening to him, and what I discovered is that the reason he buys so many shoes is that for years he only could afford one pair of shoe. He had holes in the shoes. He had holes in the soles. He promised himself if he ever got financially affluent that he was going to buy as many shoes as he can find. Now, he has 200 pairs of shoes. He doesn't have 200 outfits to wear with the shoes.
Right.
But that was his thing that drove him. Well, that was something that he used to numb his pain.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Frivolous as it is, it numbs pain. So that's the second time. So a lot of times we spend and we buy things basically to numb our pain. But that brings us to the second thing. We also rely on a lot of caffeinated products.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a natural high, you don't need caffeine. You don't need coffee. You don't need tea. You don't need caffeine Coca-Colas or colas. You just don't need caffeine to make it through the day.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've noticed is that you see people, they drink coffee the minute they get up. They drink 6 or 7, 8 cups of coffee during the day. They drink coffee all the way till they go to bed. Caffeine is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
Any way you look at it, it's no different than cocaine.
Right.
But we don't look at it as such because it's a socially accepted drug.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need coffee to get up and to get down, that means you're probably numbing some pain and you need to deal with where that pain is. But most times we don't talk about it. And then to just kind of give you a sense of what I mean, I was addicted to Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, Dew fans. And I decided I was going to go off of Mountain Dew. Had the shakes.
Yeah.
Because it's a caffeine. It's a drug.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. If you need that drug to get you through the day, then you need to ask yourself, what is it that I'm trying to numb myself from?
Yeah. Why do I need this?
And most people don't ask that question because most people are in pain of some sort. And the caffeine gets them up. It comes down. It gets them up. It gets them. But you should have a natural high if you enjoy your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that just comes just because you woke up in the morning.
Right.
So that's the second sign. The last sign is that when you just really don't want to be around,
mm-hmm.
you know, they don't do anything to you, but you can't stand them.
So when this is all about emotions, you talk about passion and how passion can help you fulfill your dreams. How do they get there?
Well, the first thing is to decide what gives you passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we forget. I mean, it's the little things that we forget. When I was in college, I played ping pong.
Oh, yeah.
And I played it all the time. I was addicted to ping pong.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not picked up a ping pong paddle until the Olympics when I was sitting and watching the ping pong event. Sometimes you forget what gives you passion
mm-hmm.
because you get into the daily routine, get into taking care of family, getting taking care of your job, taking care of, you know, your household.
Right.
You forget what gives you passion. So one of the things that we prescribe that people need to go back and say, what makes you happy? Not what makes the people down the street happy, not what society says you should have, because a lot of times we do things based on what, quote unquote, we should be. We live in certain neighborhoods based on where people say we should be. We live in certain size houses based on what people say we should be. We even drive certain cars, wear certain clothes based on what people say we should be in our social stature.
Mm-hmm.
But is that really who you are as an individual? And I don't think people even ask themselves that. I made a change. A very traumatic change, and my family wasn't happy.
Oh, yeah?
But I had to make a change because I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the breadwinner, so I get to make those changes.
Right.
But, you know, so sometimes it's just saying, what makes you happy? What do you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
I like to write, and I've always liked to write. But when you start talking about going into a career of writing, it's very different than just writing for fun.
Sure.
It's now business.
Yeah, and it can be difficult as well.
It can be a very difficult business. So the first thing is find out what makes you happy. I mean, what can you do that you know that if you didn't make any money, you would do it anyway?
I'd like to ask you this, along with that, though. How do you get to the point to, I mean, I would imagine some people are in such a funk that they maybe not even realize to look at what they're passionate about. You know, how do they get to that point to even think for themselves, I have to look at what I'm passionate about, like there's something wrong, I'm maybe not doing things right, or I have to look at another way of doing things. Is there something before that, you know?
I mean, first of all, is recognizing you may be doing something wrong. Sometimes, you know, I was telling someone, when you have disposable income, and then you're spending every dollar, and you don't know what you actually bought.
Right.
But you spent it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to ask yourself at the end of the day, what did I just buy?
Yeah. You have to come to that realization somehow, I guess.
And so that right there is a sign that maybe you're not happy, or you have someone who likes to shop. And yeah, there are a lot of people who like to shop. Mm-hmm. But then when you ask them, did you buy anything you like? They have rows and rows of clothes in their closet with tags on them.
No, I just shop.
They just shop.
Yeah.
Okay, why do you just shop?
Mm-hmm.
Partly that's because they need to find something that makes them excited.
Right.
And shopping has a certain euphoria. It makes you excited. It's like gambling. Gambling has a euphoria.
Sure.
But it really doesn't have a purpose.
Right.
So the question is, what makes you happy? But if you're doing things that are seemingly destructive to yourself, those are warning signs that you're not happy. Mm-hmm. But what happens, some of those things have become socially accepted. Shopping is a socially accepted addiction.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling has now become a socially accepted addiction. But if you can't stop, nonetheless, it's an addiction. When you have an addiction, that's a signal to your body that something is wrong. So you stop and ask yourself, what's wrong? And a lot of times we don't do that because a lot of those things are socially accepted. But nonetheless, it's an addiction, whether it's, you know, just like a drug addiction. It's just a different substance.
And when we come back, I want to talk more about Uplift Inc.
You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
If you have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking To Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
Okay, we're back. I'm talking with Ida Bird Hill about getting your life back on track from financial problems. What is Uplift Inc. and how did that get started?
Uplift Inc. is an idea incubator. We create ideas for corporations, for school districts and cities to help get them back into place. And how that came to be, I decided one day while I was managing millions, my portfolio was slightly over $500 million, that I really don't like this. I mean, I'm good at it. I'm making a lot of money at it. But it does not make me happy. And I had to decide what makes me happy. I can think of ideas at the drop of a hat. That just gets me excited. So I decided that was time for me to make a transition to do something that I really, really like to do. And that's to implement new ideas. Mm-hmm. So we created this nonprofit. And that's what we do all day. We implement new ideas, of course, for a fee. In different places in order to reconstruct corporations and communities.
And what are your ideals about college, about getting diplomas and degrees?
I think in this day and age, to not have a college degree is a travesty.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't do it anymore. Right now, we are what we call the knowledge-based economy all over the world. And it requires a certain thinking pattern. And the only way that you're going to get groomed for that thinking pattern is that you got to go to college. Now, this is a debate I hear people talk about all the time. Well, my kid is going to go into skilled trades. And I have to remind people, skilled trades have changed.
Mm-hmm.
They have 4-year apprenticeships, which, as far as I'm concerned, is just like college.
Right.
So you need the same skill sets, because what the economy is looking for are people who can think. One of the reasons why the unemployment rate all over the world is so high is corporations have jobs that require people who have critical thinking skills and who have creative and innovative thinking abilities, but the population doesn't have the skill sets. So you have jobs over here that go unfilled. Then you have unemployed people over on the other side, and they don't mesh because what brings them together is that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say that to people, people get upset. but it is what it is. And it doesn't matter what country you go to in this point. Right now, there's a competition between countries of who's going to have the most college-educated residents. Those who have the most college-educated residents get the most corporations. Those corporations bring with them jobs.
Right.
Real basic, real simple. But it's very difficult for people to grasp, particularly in places that are based in manufacturing, where you could go get a $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 job to screw on a widget.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are over, and yeah, they're never, ever coming back unless you're the person who created the robot who's going to screw on the widget.
Right.
So the issue is you got to go to college. You know, you got to get some post-secondary type training, and you got to be able to push your thinking and creativity skills a lot further than they've ever been pushed before.
And then what about so many people claiming that there are no jobs? What are the facts regarding jobs? Are there jobs?
There are jobs. More jobs than we can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
We know right now the United States by themselves has a 10 million job shortage. At the same time, it has the highest unemployment in the last 20 years.
Wow.
And the disconnect is the type of jobs. The jobs are requiring a science, technology, engineering, mathematical, financial, or sales background.
All the more reason we need degrees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are the jobs that are available,
mm-hmm,
but the people don't have the skill sets. I mean, you have to have a certain skill set to sell. You got to have a certain skill set to program a computer. You got to have a certain skill to design things. And we are in this knowledge-based creative design world that the people who are the most creative, the people who can design and innovate and invent, those are the people who are going to be employed. Everyone else will not be employed. And that's hard for us to really grasp. But we think it's just happening. Well, it's just happening in America, or it's just happening in Canada, it's just happening in Europe. No, it's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter whether you're in Poland, doesn't matter whether you're in China, doesn't matter whether you're in India. Technology is driving the entire economy worldwide in that direction. So you got to have a degree. And actually, as I told my kids, you need to have 2 or 3 degrees because the bachelor is now the old high school diploma.
Yeah.
Criteria. Mm. So if you don't have a master's or a PhD, you may not qualify for much of anything any longer.
Wow.
So you got to go out and get it.
Now, you've written a number of books, and I was pleasantly surprised to find that they're written for a variety of age groups.
Yes.
Tell me about the books.
Well, one of the reasons why we wrote the books for different age brackets is we're trying to get families into college and career planning.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that it just amazes me, people wait until their kids get into the high school to start that planning. And planning really should start almost from birth.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get your kids into something that they love to do for a living. Now, will they stay there? Not necessarily. But if you get them on a track where you're preparing them for a certain career and college, even if they deviate, they may not deviate that far. They're still prepared. And I use a good example. My son loved cartoons. I mean, oh my God. I mean, he was obsessed. Some kids would sit there for 20 minutes and they're up and they're playing. Not this kid. He could sit for hours. So I was like, well, he's going to be a cartoonist. Now, I made that decision as his parent.
Mm-hmm.
He was 2.
Okay.
So we drug him around to Disney University stuff. We drug him to Walt Disney Studios. We drug him to, you know, university studios all throughout his existence. But then about 9 years old, he decided, I don't really want to be a cartoonist. Cool. What you want to be? I really want to be a video game designer. Well, the same skills it takes to be a cartoonist are the same skills it takes to be a video game designer.
Sure, they're similar.
So they're very similar. Mm-hmm. So good, we'll make that transition. So mommy makes the transition to video game designer. That lasts until he gets to the 9th grade or 15.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, he doesn't want to be a cartoonist any longer. He really doesn't want to be a video game designer. Now he wants to be an electrical engineer.
Okay.
I don't really care because the same thing that I prepared him for as a cartoonist, the same skills that were necessary to be a video game designer are the exact same skills that are necessary to be the electrical engineer. Plus, he got a bonus. I made him go into the arts. People mm-hmm. go, why? Because he needs to understand that creativity remains the same. Whether it's 2011, whether it's 1586, the same creativity skills have been around for hundreds of years, and they're probably not going to change. And if you understand how to manipulate those creativity skills, then you can be flexible and move from one industry and one career to the next.
Right.
So I believe that if you start kids when they're young and it's a discussion that you're having when they're little, and as they age, it makes them easier to maneuver through society. So he'll go and be an electrical engineer. He's actually got a full ride scholarship to Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. And
great,
we're pretty excited about that. But the issue is that started not when he was 15. That started when he was 2.
Mm-hmm.
And if we start them when they're 2 and we start evolving our families around what the kids are going to be as they, then it makes an easier transition for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understand where they're going and they understand the things that they like. Because I didn't choose electrical engineer for him. He did.
Yeah.
Because that's what he likes. But he also likes art. So I think that if you find a passion when the kid is younger, it's easier to keep them academically on track. And then they'll finish through their college years.
Yeah, I think there's too many young kids that they reach an age in high school and beyond where they just don't know what they want to do.
And then they hate school.
Yeah, yeah. That's some great advice. Do you hold regular workshops?
Well, most of the workshops that we're holding lately have been specifically for schools.
Okay.
We've been going into a lot of schools all over the metropolitan area providing workshops. And part of that is because we have a captive audience. We mm-hmm. have parents.
Right.
Because we believe that they're the first teacher and they have the ability to change what their children think,
mm-hmm.
Probably more so than any entity, even though we say schools do. But I really think the parents have that ability. So we've been going into a lot of schools. So we haven't really done a lot of public workshops.
Okay.
That may change. And if people want to go onto our website periodically, we're probably going to have a major community workshop beginning in September.
And that website is?
Uplift, UPLIFT. INC.org.
Okay, upliftinc.org. How do you see the financial future, especially locally?
I think that the financial future to me is bright. And I know everybody is going to be upset when I say that because on the surface it seems so negative.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is when you have that so much went bad for both, you know, Windsor and Detroit, it gives you an opportunity to say, okay, what else can we do? I mean, just simple, basic things that need to happen as we're evolving into this more innovation, invention-oriented community.
Now, I was going to ask you what you think people should be doing to make a difference. You went into, you know, talking about inventing. Would that be your advice, or is there something else as well that you think that
I think that people should be starting to look around and see what is actually happening in their community. When we opened Uplift Inc. a few years ago, I really got into the schools very heavy. And people mm-hmm. go, why? Because I saw that while it was a mess, it also presents an opportunity for someone to fix.
Right.
When there's an opportunity, there's usually cash
mm-hmm.
where the opportunity lies. But sometimes we look beyond it because we're seeing such a negativity that we don't see any opportunity, even though it's right in front of us.
Right.
And that's in all of our communities. There are things that are happening in your community that if you just be observant and say, okay, I have this need. I wonder if other people have the same need. And it's something that's that basic. But we're looking for something catastrophic to fall from heaven. And
yeah,
it usually doesn't
yeah.
work like that. It's something that is very basic in within your community. I use a good example. I broke my leg. And I've been experimenting with how to redesign a crutch.
Okay.
Because the crutch has not been redesigned.
For a long time.
In 50, 60 years. Well,
yeah.
Those things are so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're uncomfortable. So I've been playing around, even though I'm not a designer, I'm not a manufacturer or an engineer. I've been playing around with the design of the crutch
mm-hmm.
because if I felt it was uncomfortable, how many other people think that it's uncomfortable?
Sure.
And I'm almost there, almost
oh, yeah?
closely
okay.
there. So eventually, you know, I'll finish this crutch design and I'm going to try to sell the crutch.
Mm-hmm.
But for me to spend time doing the design work, even if I'm working, I do it after hours.
Sure.
It's just my free time invention. And that people can do the same thing. But you have to look and say, what thing is driving me crazy first?
Yeah.
And then you invest your time in fixing the problem for yourself. And then you'll find that there's probably a market to fix it for other people as well.
You have to realize, I guess, that there's always opportunity.
Always, always.
It's been great having you on the show. Can you give the website information again?
Yes, we're at upliftinc.org, and that's UPLIFTINC.ORG.
All right, Ida, appreciate you being on the show, and best wishes with Uplift Inc.
All righty, thank you.
Well, it's people like Ida Bird Hill who devote their time and energy into making a difference in our communities. It's important to know that when we need a hand, advice, or information, it's available. And we can reach out for these things just as we are being reached out to by those who truly care. That's it. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.